Hey everybody, Coach Jonathan here. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to ask for your help with something. Right now on our Facebook page, there's a survey that you can fill out that will let us know how you use Trainer Road so that we can make it even better. If you wouldn't mind going to our Facebook page, clicking that survey and filling it out, that would be a huge help for us, and it's going to make 2017 an even better year for Trainer Road. Thanks for listening and for the help. Now let's get to the podcast. Welcome to the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and with me is our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hey, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And this is where you can get answers to your cycling and triathlon training related questions. You can submit them to us at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can find the latest episode there as well. Or you can use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad, and we'll comb through the different social platforms we have. Even on Snapchat, you can send us stuff there, and we'll get to as many questions as we can each week and put them in here. This week, and before we get into anything very specific, I noticed a trend, and a lot of people ask this question. So in more or less terms, a lot of people, since they're going into the off season, they're wondering how they can maintain their fitness through the off season. Or we had four people just within the last few hours sending questions that they're injured and they need to either get surgery or they're taking time off, something else in the off season. They've tried to time it that way. And what can they do coming back? So a couple, let's just talk about a couple different avenues people can take during the off season. Number one, to maintain fitness. And then number two, to give yourself a break and come back from that.
And prevent injury.
Yeah, certainly.
So we have a couple plans aimed at maintaining high intensity fitness, but that's exactly what they're about, is high intensity fitness. So if you need a break from intervals, and come this time of year, if you've been through the whole base build and specialty cycle and maybe even done it multiple times, you probably need a break from that higher intensity stuff. So then you just kind of, I always recommend doing something else. I mean, just for so many reasons, refreshes you physiologically and more importantly, or at least as importantly, psychologically. I mean, really all we're after is maintenance of your aerobic engine. You know, maybe you work on building some strength, maybe you target some skills, but in any case, you can maintain aerobic fitness a number of ways. So I mean, just absolutely mix it up. If you want to stick to the bike and you do want to avoid intensity, that's when you can kind of shift down into that lower intensity, traditional base sort of approach. But that's assuming you want to spend time indoors, you want to spend that much time on the bike, et cetera.
You know, and along those lines, I think a lot of people feel like they need a break from the intensity a lot of the time at the end of the season. But I've personally found that I actually don't need a break from that intensity. This is personally, and those maintenance plans are really good for that. They keep the intensity up, but the duration is shorter. If you feel like that's still too much, would it be a possible solution? Could they sub in the 45-minute or the shorter versions?
There's also on that same, it's in our enthusiast designation in the specialty plans, there's time crunch plans, 45-minute and 30-minute, and they're exactly what they sound like. Different, depending on the volume, there's only two volumes, but depending on which plan you choose, they're either 35, three times a week or five times a week, which five times a week is a bit excessive for maintenance. Three times a week is absolutely sufficient. You can do it with two. But the point is, they're super short workouts, 30 minutes on and off the bike or 45 tops.
I think some to like kind of maintain calorie burn and but not have too much training stress. I think traditional base, low volume one, but even some of those are 90 minutes. I think I've been calling this workout petite, but I think you say it petite.
I think it's petite.
Yeah.
Petite.
You haven't corrected me. You just correct me next time. That's it.
He smiles
I like
smugly
to say,
instead.
It happens all the time, Nate.
Silly boy.
But even, I don't know, Chad, what do you think? Even just doing, so if it's three times a week, petite, which is like endurance, 60 minutes, you're going to burn, I think for me, it burns around 650 calories. Like you get some aerobic stuff, but it's also like that's the workout when I'm feeling kind of thrashed. I do that one and it's like, I feel better now.
Yeah. I think it's sufficient. I mean, your FTP obviously is going to decline a bit, but that's the off season. That's going to happen, but that's enough maintenance. I mean, 60 minutes, three times a week, maintaining your consistency, getting on there, getting a bit of a sweat up, bringing your heart rate up into, you know, a reasonable range is enough for most athletes.
And it's the biggest thing is kind of like your body does rebuild so you can work harder in the future. Mm-hmm. So it's being okay with your FTP dropping, because I'm just on the end of we talk about macro and micro cycles. I'm on a 3-week cycle. I think you are too now with
same plan, same timing. Yeah.
I am tired. I went home last night after a workout and my wife was like, "You look awful." And
over-unders too. Oh.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yesterday was over-unders. I stopped for 30 seconds in the last one. That's it. Mm. But it was really hard. And anyways, next week I'm looking so forward to it and having that like little mental break. And I mentioned it before, usually during that time, I feel horrible for like 4 or 5 days in. Then when the weekend comes, I'm like, my power meter's broken.
Right.
Yeah. Like, and that's just a week, but this is, we're talking about a whole season. So having that break off, and it can be accomplished too by playing basketball or, you know, doing something else that, that just regenerates your mind. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much less training stress than doing four intense workouts or three intense workouts and TSS fillers during the week.
And the psychological burden of just keeping up that you know, trying to maintain your FTP or grow it all year is impossible. And it's just,
sometimes your mind outpaces your body with that too. And one thing to know, and we'll get into coming back from injury here in a second, but treat the off season as it should be treated. Don't be looking for gains. Be okay. Like Chad said, your FTP will drop and that is okay. And that's actually good. You need to let yourself drop down a bit.
Compare it to the FTP that you started last season.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do it like, so I'm 1 month in. Where was I 1 month ago last season, last year?
Right.
And then that should be an increase if you were consistent and diligent in your training all year long. Then you're like, that's a win.
That's a much more fair comparison point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way to do it. So be okay with it dropping down. And the one thing that I always try to remember is it's a combination of fitness and freshness that make up my form. And if I am working on one of those things, then I'm going to be getting better. So it operates in different scales, small ones and big ones. Now for recovery from an injury, Chad, if somebody is going through that, I think first we're not doctors, so we can't claim that we know exactly how you should go about this, but I'd say that it's the one principle. It's always fair to err on the side of caution and to not go into it too deep.
Yeah, and depending on the severity of the injury, there's probably should be a physician or a physical therapist or someone whose, you know, profession is exactly that in the mix. We can just make our training recommendations, but typically it is that err on the side of caution. You have to, obviously you don't want to cause further damage, extend the whole healing process, et cetera. And again, it's just like with FTP declines in the off season, there is going to be a decline in fitness, but this is cyclical. It's always cyclical, whether it's within a 4 week macro cycle or an entire season, there's ebbs and flows in terms of fitness.
So I feel in terms of injury, this is more broad based, but there are some injuries where you have to not like it's like a use injury and you have to actually rest for it to get better. Then there are some injuries that are caused by some kind of imbalance and you'll rest. And I've had this happen, or something structural wrong with you. You'll rest for like 6 weeks and then you'll come back and it just comes right back at it. And those can be really bad. Mm. And if you think you need to just rest, but you have another problem, that's when you're in trouble. And that's when it can get, my wife's had this before and I've had it before too. I actually had a tendon in my leg flipped over a bone and I couldn't run more than like half a mile. I went to physical therapy, went to doctors, got x-rays. They're like, maybe you have a fracture or something. No one could figure out. Actually, massage therapist figured it out. He felt it and he goes, he flipped it over in it.
That had to have hurt.
It did hurt. Yeah. He didn't even warn me. He goes, oh, here it is. And he flips it. And the next day I ran 7 miles with pain free.
Wow.
And it would keep flipping back, but he taught me how to flip it myself. Wow. It's my, I think, peroneus longus. I think that's in the outside of your calf muscle.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's an example of something where just rest doesn't help. Mm. IT band, you have to rest, but you also have to address the imbalance or will happen over and over and over again.
That's the important thing, the imbalance. Chances are there's some type of muscular imbalance or alignment issue that you have that's caused that. A lot of people target it, they think it's tight, but the only reason that the pain is manifest there is usually an imbalance.
Yep.
When I dealt with mine this year, I had a severe imbalance in my glutes and I spent so much time, like you said, I couldn't just rest. I had to rest wisely. I had to make sure that I avoided certain things, but I put in so much time doing alternative activities in that case. If I rode my bike, I got a lot of pain, but in that case, I did a lot of glute work, a lot of work in the gym, and that's like another off-season thing too, you know, to think about.
I've been having IT band problems. just in these last like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen during the workout, but afterwards, like a couple hours afterwards, I'll feel it, or when I wake up. Mm-hmm. And I've talked before on the podcast about releasing, but what I haven't been doing, I've just started to. IT band is almost always a glute medius problem, weak glute medius. Mm-hmm. And runners get it all the time. Glute medius is the muscle on kind of on the side of your butt that helps you go side to side. And as a runner or a cyclist, you never use that.
Yep.
So you have glute maximus that's like very well trained, and then these teeny glute minimus.
Even
medius,
runners.
Yeah.
We went
medius, not minimus.
My girlfriend and I did a hike, Shirley Canyon up at Squaw Valley, 3 miles up, 3 miles down. And there's a lot of lateral movement, a lot of movement that's well outside of what you do on a bike and even just running. And I got to tell you, my glute medius, both sides are just, we're completely lit up for the next couple of days, making it very clear that I don't utilize those muscles very often.
And those play a huge role in stabilizing your leg during the pedal stroke. And I think a lot of us, we look down at our knee, and when our knee wobbles around, your knee shouldn't wobble around. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And chances are your glute medius is weak.
That's
that
a great thing to work
it.
On. The, yeah. I mean, hip glute stability. Medius is, it's such a small muscle. You can kind of work it year round and you're not going to have a huge recovery problem. Like if you were doing full body squats or like cleans or something.
Right. And proper body weight squats, like a couple things to work on your glute medius, clamshells with resistance bands, that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You can do one legged squats, but you have to make sure, and it's a good way to do it is elevated. So have your either stand on a curb or something slightly higher. And then when you do that one legged squat and you're just squatting down, you have to make sure that every single bit of your weight is in your heel, not through your toes.
Fire your glutes. Cyclists are sadly glute deficient. We just don't have those muscles. We just don't utilize those muscles. You know, to a greater extent, you use them when you get up out of the saddle, but most of us don't spend much time out of the saddle. And even then, it's not really full hip extension. It's not what we're looking for to activate those muscles thoroughly.
What Jonathan talked about too, your glute medius being a stabilizer, the best way, so if you're a triathlete and you're a runner, the best way to mess up your IT band is to run downhill and to not lean into the hill. So my wife just hurt her leg doing back-to-back duathlon. And then a race here locally in Reno that both had big downhills, and she couldn't walk for like a day, and then we released it and we got her. Wow. She's running again now, like a week later. But
when you say lean into the hill, are you saying, because it's natural to want to lean back into the gradient, but you're saying lean forward to kind of put yourself more perpendicular to the gradient?
Yeah, it's when you're running downhill and you're doing these big heel strikes, and you can just feel there's so much damage that coming into it, and your glute medius gets overwhelmed and your IT band gets inflamed. What I found is that if I lean into it more, I'll go a lot faster. It'll be a lot smoother. And it almost feels like, you know, if you keep your body perpendicular to the hill as you run down, rather than trying to like lean back and slow you down, and you can go way faster than other people. And you land then more midfoot strike or, forefoot, like your ball, your foot strike.
Mm-hmm.
And that greatly reduces it. But in general, if you have any IT band problems, don't run hills at all. Like when I found out that I moved in a different part of Reno, and one part of Reno had lots of hills and I'd always have problems. And I moved to the flats and only ran flats. You can still run some hills. Like I do repeats, but I just wouldn't run downhill. Mm-hmm. I'd only run downhill in a race. I don't think you really need to train to run downhill. You know what I mean? It's you kind of, once you learn how to do it, you can do it all the time, but that would greatly reduce my injury rate.
Huh.
Yeah, well, same deal with that hike. 3 miles up, no problem. 3 miles back down on some pretty steep stuff and slick rock and, you know, coarse rock too. But it was so much more painful and it took as much time. It was miserable. And that, I guarantee, is what led to all the soreness.
Hmm. Yeah. So when you are coming back from those injuries, don't get overzealous. And one thing that's really hard, we're all type A driven athletes, but if you take time and you take care of things properly and make sure that you aren't just rushing back into it, it will pay off later on in the year.
You got to figure out, again, what kind of injury it is. Because I think my wife now, she can start running a little bit, know that her IT band's going to be a little bit sore, but with the releasing and working out, we can kind of mitigate the problems and she can probably go 3 times a week. If she were to take a month off and then run, I kind of tell her that she's going to keep having IT band problems until her glute medius gets really strong.
Yeah.
But we can kind of make it so she can continue to work out. But there's other injuries where I've had where like underneath my kneecap, that has been like really kind of like sandpaper in there. Mm-hmm. That was just overuse and bike fit. I had to push my cleats back. But my kneecap was in front of my in front of my cleat, you know?
Yeah.
It was like way far. I have a long femur. And that's how that problem would happen. And that was just use. I had to like ice it and not do anything.
Right.
And that one I couldn't test it or anything like that. So it's really dependent on the injury.
Yes.
And learning. And this is the other thing that you have to do is some people don't have that mind body connection. My wife, she admits that she doesn't have it as much.
Yeah.
She doesn't like, I'll push on parts of her leg and she's like, it actually does hurt there. And now that she kind of realizes it, she can feel it, right?
Yeah.
To be able to be really in tune with.
Right.
With your body and what muscles are doing what.
Yeah. Yeah. Great tip. So hopefully that gives a lot of you some food for thought and some guidance going into the off season. Let's go into Brian's question. He says, I have a teammate asking about the science behind openers. And those are the workout that you would do like the day before a race, anything like that. He says, I checked PubMed for some literature on it, but I didn't come up with much. Can you point me in the right direction?
Yeah, Brian, I've come up against the same thing. There isn't a whole lot of information or research to back the idea behind it. And one of them is, obviously physiological. We're trying to basically open the legs up, prime them for the efforts that are to follow. I've always approached it, though, or appreciated it from more of a psychological perspective. It's just kind of a reminder of what it's like to go hard. It's part of my habits leading into a race. I mean, there's all the benefits I see are psychological. And when I try to look for physiological ones, I come up pretty short. I mean, the one study I found, it was 2014 or 15, McIntyre and Kilding. And they just did several different protocols. So they did like a self-selected, a steady state, a short effort sort of thing. And all of them had different effects on heart rate and blood lactate and VO2 kinetics and all that stuff. But there wasn't any change in performance outcome. They all had the same net effect on performance. I found another one in the IJSSPP, the International Journal of Sports and Physiology and Performance, and same thing. They did this was just prior to an event, and they did different protocols and different effects on different metabolic responses, but the performance outcome was the same yet again.
Do you do them?
Yeah, I do, and I personally feel that it is 100% psychological. I don't feel I don't believe that I'm actually doing anything muscularly
speaking.
But if
it's
speaking,
a placebo,
right?
Is it a placebo?
Well, see, unfortunately, what they didn't test was people who didn't do priming events or priming efforts and people who did do priming efforts. Mm. That would be actually fruitful and tell us something, but couldn't find anything on that.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people talk about, maybe on race day they're tight or they just felt like they couldn't. In one way or another, they were tight or they couldn't turn over the pedals like they wanted to. And for me, I do like to do something the day before or 2 days before, but it's not for any type of physical gain. It's all really mental for me because it allows me to kind of run like a systems test, right? The day before. So then I come into the next day knowing exactly where I'm at and I take confidence in that.
Sure. Now, and it's basically a concentrated taper workout.
Yeah.
You're doing short, hard efforts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there might be some
benefit.
That's
a good question. Chad, can you explain what openers are? Some people are probably listening to this, but what's an opener?
Oh, yeah. So, relative to your event, so if you're a long, steady state event versus a short, high explosive energy sort of event, they'll be different, but basically they're short efforts that mimic what you're going to face the next day. So, if you're going to do a criterium, you might do some short 5 second, maybe 10 second sprints. If you're going to do, and then maybe include some short VO2 max work. I'm talking like minute efforts, nothing terribly long. Maybe you're going to do a 40K time trial. So you'll go out and do some 3 minute efforts or maybe 5 minute efforts close to threshold, that sort of thing. But basically it's kind of a familiarization with, exactly what you're going to come up against the next day.
And in terms of how that ends up being structured and everything else, I see a lot of people err heavily on both sides of what is probably appropriate. And it's going to vary for each person. It's going to vary, like Chad said, for your race, but just a couple guidelines. Number one, if you do go hard the day before, just think of it in terms of your fitness and your freshness. You're going to be making yourself more fatigued the day before that race. And that's not ideal if you go too hard. But at the same time, you're not going to be hurting yourself if you do short efforts that replicate something that you'll face on race day, something that you can easily recover from, something that is less stressful than a typical workout that you're doing at that point. It doesn't have to be just soft pedaling around the block though. If somebody's doing harder efforts, that's okay.
But as is so often the case, it's something you got to try and see. Mm-hmm. I've taken 2 days off before a race and felt really flat. taking 2 days off before a race, different training load, and felt really good. I needed that recovery.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is the two benefits I see with openers, or maybe the major benefit is, especially if you're traveling to like another race, your bike's all set up with all your race equipment and you're going to like shift through your bike and actually do a ride on it.
Yeah.
That is a huge benefit.
Full right? systems test on your bike. Make sure everything works.
Exactly. And you're in your race kit and everything's there. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. The other thing that I would use, I occasionally do these. It all depends on how I'm feeling fatigue wise. If I'm super tired, like I am today, I would not do it.
Another day's rest is absolutely going to benefit you more than another short workout.
Yeah.
But if I'm like raring to go, and I've already like tapered for a week or sometimes 2 weeks for like an Ironman, then I will do it. And the thing that I focus on is I think as a way, we talked about it last podcast, as a way to kind of top off the muscles. So I kind of get in that state where you're quote, like you're more susceptible to taking nutrients. And then I take that root shake like immediately after and try to, because we talked about there's science, there is science behind that about getting more glycogen and faster and kind of extra top it off. And then with that, you can take caffeine at the same time. And that will also absorb more carbohydrate.
Facilitate glucose so you can
kind of, yeah, exactly. So you kind of, you have to do it early in the morning, but you kind of put all of those together and maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't, but.
I did exactly that last year at National Championships for mountain bikes. 2 days before the race, we had a short track event and a lot of people skipped that because they're like, it's 2 days before, I don't want to do anything that hard. And because short track racing is brutal on a mountain bike, it's really hard efforts and it's short laps and it's fast and hard for, you know, 40 minutes or so all out. But for me, I knew going into that, that 2 days before a race, I could do something hard at that point and I would be just fine. I was coming in and I had a week taper leading into that. And so I was pretty rested. And then the next morning I went out and I pre-rode the course very early and I took a recovery drink, just like you mentioned, Nate. And I just did one lap and that lap wasn't that hard. I knew that the pitch, you know, the climbs were going to force me to pedal hard. So I didn't have to worry about increasing the pace, anything else than that. And I went into that race really sharp, really fresh.
To do, to get that, your body, I'm not sure what the length or intensity is, but I know to get your body to be able to, Chad, maybe you can help me with this, but to get the higher rate of glycogen intake, you need to be doing some, you need to burn some glycogen. You need to be doing some intense efforts.
Yeah. Right? I don't have any hard information on that. I don't know exactly how long it takes, but, it's same thing. You kind of have to create a deficit and exercise, different hormone release. There are, you know, actual physiological occurrences that facilitate, like I said, that glucose uptake and caffeine enhances that uptake.
Yeah. So, and I guess rules of thumb are make sure that if you are doing openers, if you're going to do a full distance triathlon, don't go out and do 10 second sprints or whatever else, you know, do something that might better replicate what you'll be doing on race day. And if you're doing something short, you know, the other way around. So try to replicate something on race day. It's anecdotal. I feel that it works.
Yeah. I think for even a triathlete, you could, like Chad said, people might do, some 800s or longer efforts, but maybe like 2 800s at a, you know, at a pretty fast, maybe your 5K pace, something like that, or like 3 minutes at threshold, that kind of, a couple of those, but not like 10 800s at, you know, at your mile pace or something.
Yeah. Yeah. John, he says, good day, guys. He must be from Australia. He must be. He says, I'm a newbie to Trainer Road, but a long-term podcast listener. Love your show and learning all the time from your very informative and easy to follow expert advice. Good to have you on Trainer Road now too, John. Good stuff. He says, the question I have to you guys is, how can one identify their strengths and weaknesses in a bid to target the best training and build plans? Rather than going on feel, are you able to elaborate on any specific tests or workouts to quantify these strengths and weaknesses using Trainer Road? I've read a little bit, or I've read a little about this in Allen and Coggin, but thought this would be a worthy topic to discuss and something listeners out there could really benefit from. I'm 44 years old, performance-driven recreational rider enthusiast, and working through week 4 of Sweet Spot Base on Oahu Kicker and absolutely loving it. Greetings from down under.
He is.
Cheers, John. Familiar. He is. Yes.
Is it, John, the training plans don't address or they don't specifically target strengths and weaknesses. They're more built around events. It's for that reason that I'm working on the training camps, and those will be specific and those will address particular limiters. or weaknesses, whatever. You have to identify those first. And we do have a number of things to do exactly that. So basically, you're just trying to discover what your power profile looks like. So from, you know, short durations up to long durations, where are you strong? Where are you weak? And when you're strong or weak, does that matter relative to your event? And pinpointing those, we have a handful of power tests. One of them actually is built on Hunter Allen. Andy Coggins, one of theirs, probably Hunter's very specific description of, you know, he has a specific workout and we've recreated that. And it's like the HA and AC power profile test. That's in our catalog. But I also created two different workouts that you could do ideally on two different days. One of them addresses 12-second and 1-minute power. And then there's another one that addresses 30-second, 2-minute, and 5-minute power, all in the same workout. So if you just go to the workout catalog and search on power tests, you'll find those. And you can decide, you know, which of those are useful to me, or, you know, run the whole gamut, do the whole thing. And see where, like I said, where you're strong, where you're weak, and do those actually matter to what you're going to do?
Training camps, so those are, if you're not a long-term listener, you might not know, but our idea on training camps are a week or so of intense, lots of workout or lots of training stress, targeting a specific weakness, say anaerobic power. For timeline on that, it's going to be after Android and Mac are all the way out because we want to get that out first. But just in case anyone's wondering, the other thing I think some people might, again, we talked about it before again, but if you're new, just focus on raising your FTP a bunch before you get into this like icing of, like once you get to 4.5 watts a kilo, like where Jonathan is, then you can be like, okay, I need to really up my 2-minute power for mountain bike racing. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to focus on that. But if you're at 2.5 watts a kilo or 3 watts a kilo, just raise your FTP.
Yeah, really. If you're a woman under 3 watts a kilogram or a guy under 4 watts a kilogram, just build your FTP.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that lends itself to increasing your sustainable power is going to benefit you across the board.
I see so many people too that are new that start out, especially those that, you know, they watch the tour, they're somehow involved in cycling culture. They identify with a certain rider or rider type, and that's what they train like. And it's like, you know, that they're a brand new rider and they're training on sprints, or they think that they're, you know, a long distance guy. And you may not even know yet. You may also, false attribution happens a lot of the time when you ride with a group. You'll ride with a group of people, you may not be familiar with them, and they drop you on a climb, so you think you're not a climber. But that may not be the case. You may have been fatigued, or they may have been extraordinary climbers. Who knows? And not just on climbing, but whatever the situation is, it's tough to, when you're new and you really haven't tried to raise the bar in every aspect of your fitness, it's really hard to find out where you're proficient and deficient.
It could be too. You're just not as trained as they are.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with climbing. Just like Pete last time in the clip, the last podcast, he said the first road race he did with me, he finished last. That was probably, he had like 2.5 watt per kilo.
Yeah.
Now he's at 400 watts. If he rode with most people on this podcast, you would consider him a climber and you not a climber if you're relative to him.
Yeah.
But then him in the pro ranks, he's not considered a climber.
Along those lines,
it's weird.
He even said he thought that he was a sprinter, and then he started riding with the pros and he realized that, oh, actually,
I'm
not a sprinter. Yeah. And this is what I'm actually good at. And in the end, with him, the answer is just raising his FTP. That's what he really wants to focus on.
A big roller. I don't know how you would describe him.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he'd probably be a really good lead out,
like,
man.
Like a breakaway.
Yeah.
Yep.
A roller. A breakaway guy too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and honestly, in every situation, if you raise your FTP, you are going to be faster. I mean, you may be able to focus on a certain aspect of fitness if it's really holding you back, and that's good to do. But if you raise your FTP, it's a safe bet that you are going to get faster.
Like sprinting, and so there's in Reno, we don't have USAC races, but we have A, B, and C's, and we've talked about a lot. But there's a lot of national champs, like the A races are extremely fast. But you can not be a sprinter, never train for a sprint, and win the C sprint if you're an A rider, right?
Oh yeah.
You can win the B sprint probably if you're an A rider, just because your power to weight ratio is so much higher.
Yeah.
And you're just coming into that.
It's got a lot of gas left in the tank.
Exactly.
Yeah. Last lap or two.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. That's the key. Yeah. So, all right, let's move on to next question.
I want to say a question.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm on my third week of training.
Yes.
This touches a lot of people. Next week, I'm going to travel for 10 days. Right. And this is going to be my recovery week. I'm going to tell you guys my plan. Okay.
Okay.
So we have the power the PowerTap pedals. I'm very lucky too. So yeah. I'm bringing a pedal wrench and all the big Allen wrenches that we have.
Nice.
And I'm going to try to do what we've talked about. I'm going to be at one hotel, but I'm going to try to take off all of the pedals and put the PowerTap pedals on.
Nice.
Do the easy workouts. And then I don't know, I should like on that next week, probably skip my FTP test because I don't want to do that on like a...
No, you don't want to do that. Yeah. No.
And maybe just do some sweet spots starting that next week off.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so... And then maybe lift some weights in there too, because I'm
kind of going into maintenance mode almost for that short bit of time where you're, and then jump back into the plan.
Yeah. Still like, I really want to optimize it because I'm still scared for Cross Vegas. I just looked at the site again. It says biggest CrossFit race in America.
It is. First very one. True. Yeah, fantastic.
First one. That's great.
No one's going to be able to tell who I am because I'm not going to have, we don't have, our trainer road kits won't be in by then.
Yeah, for the company. Yeah.
I won't tell everyone I'm wearing. Everyone will think I'm a fat guy.
Just like the tallest guy out there, it'll probably be Nate.
That'll be Nate. Yeah, the tallest
He's
guy.
He's also skinny.
Yeah, yeah.
Very skinny, yes.
Yeah, very.
Thanks, guys.
Let's go with Nick. He says, with Trainer Road, are you able to import Garmin files and simulate a course?
No.
Yeah, you can't. So, you can't. Well,
and here's the reason. And, you know, I just heard Ray, DC Rainmaker, talk about this yesterday. Simulating courses, although fun, doesn't really make you a faster rider. It just doesn't. Like, the riders will tend to ride it the same way they ride outside. There's not doing this whole, like, our whole philosophy in the way, actually, it's not our philosophy. Sons of Science backs us up. These interval, structured interval workouts are the best way to get it so that you can ride a course fast.
Yeah.
Just riding a course. I think if you want to just ride a course, just go outside and ride a course. Mm-hmm. In the winter, if you want to ride a course, I mean, ride outside, really. Riding a course inside too is not very much fun. I think there's a novel aspect of it at first where you're like, oh, I'm riding this. But then after a while, it's like, if I want entertainment, we were just talking about it. There's some great new TV shows.
Stranger Things,
awesome. Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
And I also like Hard Knocks on HBO.
Narcos just came out today.
Is that good?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
Good. It's really good.
But anyway, Stranger Things on Netflix, Mr. Robot's like one of my favorite shows now. It's always different. It's great. Anyways, that entertainment is much more entertaining than watching like a virtual course or something like that. Because it's you're just not doing yourself any favors.
This reminds me of the debate that's going on right now. So the Vuelta a España is going on right now. And Quintana and Contador and Valverde, all three of them, which it's you know, coincidence perhaps, but all three of them have come out to say that they want power meters banned in racing.
It's a little transparent.
Yeah. And Chris Froome is famous, and they're going against Chris Froome right now. And Chris Froome's famous for looking at his stem. There's even a whole Tumblr dedicated to that. You can look at it. It's called Chris Froome Looks at Stems or something like that. But people blame Chris Froome by just being a robot and riding by the numbers. And I think something people don't understand with this is that, number one, and this is, so Team Sky and Dave Brailsford even said this. He said, power meters are immensely valuable in training because that's how we structure our work. They're immensely valuable in racing because that's how we learn about the race after the fact. Mm-hmm. It's when they're on the road, you ride it so differently than you actually would. And it totally depends on the context. So the hard part about simulating something that you've ridden outside is that it wasn't training originally when you were out there riding it, right? It's a race is not going to be structured or anything else like that. It's going to be reactive and it's going to be totally different.
I think, though, in the case of Chris Froome, especially we've seen it so many times where he knows, okay, this is a 20-minute climb. If I ride, I guarantee you Team Sky knows all this stuff ahead of time.
Of course.
If I ride this climb at 102% FTP, I will get up faster than if I try to accelerate these guys and then drop way below to like 80%, then accelerate, and then drop below. And that's going to be such a higher stress. And the old way of cycling, I say old way, like before Chris Froome, I think he's really the guy that, did it.
Wiggins definitely rode similarly too,
But of...
Yeah.
Somebody attacks and everyone goes really redlined and then it kind of goes back and somebody redlines again. And then one of those red lines, somebody gives up.
They run
and
out of matches in their book.
Yep. And then they just keep redlining over and over again until who can redline the most.
It's just a war of attrition.
Yeah.
Well, now if you take like physics into it and science, So if you take the group that just redlines over and over again, or if you have this power meter group like Chris Froome, where I'm just going to ride this hill at 103 or 105%.
Constant.
He will get up faster and have less stress put on his body than the guys going in and out.
Yes.
That's when there's not, you know, wind is a minimal factor in it. But yeah, that's why he's doing that. And I think what that shows actually in that situation is who's the fittest.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so he's sensible too. He recognizes what he's good at and what's gonna hurt him. Take that power meter away from him. He'll ride the same way and he'll finish just as well.
He's trained so much with that power meter. Yeah. He knows exactly where his limits are and the feeling and everything else. And he even said that in an interview. He said, look, like the numbers are there and I see them. He said, but when I'm pacing myself up that climb, I know how long that climb is and I know what it feels like to ride at my limit for whatever that duration is. And, you know, to his credit too, it's not as if that's easy. That's really, really hard to watch riders ride away from you and to just trust that I'm doing the right thing and they're going to pop. Yeah, it's going to pay off.
Yeah.
And that's hard. And you know what? Last week there was, and perhaps not for like triathletes or other people that are really used to these steady state efforts, but for people that are like the combative road racer mentality, that can be really hard to do, but it pays off. 2 weeks ago in a road race here locally, I PR'd on the two big climbs in that road race and I was completely shocked. Hmm. That night I went out and I just stuck to the plan of having consistent power all the way up on each of them. And in every other situation when I've gone up those, it's been a battle. Our videographer, Dave, he's the state champ. He throws down like over 1,000 watts at the base and then might attack once or twice again on it. And they're like 800, 900 watt attacks. They're brutal and they're fast. But if you were to carry that pace consistently, you'd be surprised. You will be faster. And then of course you'll be catch faster later on. Yeah, you do.
The announcers, it's a little bit off topic for us, but it gets me, the announcers on these races when they're like, oh, he's blown up, blah, blah, blah. And then he's crawled his way back. He's clawed his way back. And what really happened is the guys in front slowed down a ton.
He's just paced
and
evenly.
He never changed his pace.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Right? So he never dropped and he catches up. And it's really... a lot of announcers, it's a race of physics, right?
Totally.
Like how much output you have. Mm-hmm. And they never talk about that. But that's not, I mean, you can't explain physics to people at home on the air. It's much more cool to say, he's digging deep into his...
You got to sensationalize it.
Exactly.
You can't say, oh, he's a very steady rider.
Yeah. And credit to Daniel Freeb and Richard Moore on the cycling podcast. They talked a lot about this. And they talked to Froome and they talked to Dave Brailsford. So check that out. That's really interesting because they're talking to them right now about that. And one of the questions that Daniel Freeb said, they were talking about the surging racing, and actually almost in your words, exactly, Richard Moore was saying it's a new way of racing and it's where people are smart about it. And Daniel Freeb said, then why doesn't everyone do that? That's stupid. And I thought,
there's so much stuff about that. Like all through the years of cycling, quote unquote stuff has always ruined cycling, right? Like over and over again.
Yeah.
Velo News has a great thing about what,
like,
going away from
single speed. Going away from single speed ruined cycling. No, it didn't.
It should all just be single speed, no support. No radios, steel bikes,
we should go
men
back to
racing,
leather hide,
no
chamois.
Helmets.
Yeah. Leather hide chamois. Yeah.
No roads too. Like, you know, they used to go over like dirt and stuff. Right.
Right. Right. There is progress on that front. And this is a diversion, but they just got rid of the 3-to-1 rule. So for aero bikes, that means that or TT bikes, that means
some interesting designs start to crop up.
Yeah. So there is some forward progress, and don't you dare take power meters away. That would be terrible.
They won't.
They won't.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Chris's question. He said, sorry if this has been asked previously. No worries, Chris. I'm wondering if there is a difference in FTP results and accuracy based on where you measure power. Example, if I use a CompuTrainer, which measures power at the tire versus another rider calculating power at the pedal. It sounds like that was a very personal example right there, right? That was like asking for a friend, but...
I got a friend who's got 10 more watts than me, but he calculates it at the pedal.
Do I lose drivetrain efficiency on my resulting power numbers? If so, is there basic maths I can apply to get my adjusted normalized number?
100% there is a difference because there is the drivetrain loss. And we've talked about just different lubes on your chain being 5 watts difference. And that's just the lube on your chain. I've heard anywhere between 5 to 10% power difference for your drivetrain. Mm-hmm. But it's all going to matter about how clean it is, you know, how well you take care of it, the components on it, your bottom bracket, the flex in your crank arms. I mean, all those things are, everything's pretty stiff now. Yeah. But really your chain and your drivetrain can make a huge difference. I think bottom bracket is one thing that people don't look at about how tight that is.
Makes such a huge difference. Yeah, I've seen it where you think about it. Yeah.
Because what it is, you know, 2 watts there, 3 watts on the chain, your pulley's 3 watts, and maybe your cassette's newer, that's 3 watts.
And how stoked would you be?
What did I say?
If you just
8 watts there?
Yeah, like gain 9 watts on your FTP, you'd be happy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that can win you a race, right? Like that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So we don't know the exact numbers, but in. But yes, there is definitely a difference from where you measure power.
Yeah. You know,
but this difference, we got to keep in mind what's important here, and it's improvement. So so whether you measure it at the wheel or at the crank, doesn't matter. You see 10 watts improvement, it's still 10 watts improvement.
Yeah, this keep it consistent is the key, right?
Yeah, this is the, my friend is a little bit higher than me.
Yeah.
But I have a handicap.
Yeah. And that's the key thing, what Chad said there. As long as you're measuring consistently with the same tool, then
it's a consistent tool.
Precise.
Yeah. Better word. Then you'll be better off there. One thing, yesterday, DC Rainmaker, he did a Facebook Live with the founder of Quark yesterday. It's pretty interesting stuff. And I asked him a question more specifically about the difference in measurement between a crank arm and a spider based one. And he talked a lot about how power meters measured, force in different ways, and how certain power meters don't measure strain properly or certain ones do. It was really interesting. So you can check that out on his Facebook channel. Chris, that could give you even more information about this stuff. You can, a deep dive of sorts.
Yeah.
So.
But again, Chris, and we'll see how many questions we get to today, but there'll be a recurrent theme, and it's a recurrent theme that's going to happen across all podcasts. It always comes down to performance. Don't get so lost in the numbers that you lose sight of the fact that, are you performing better on the race course? You know, maybe your friend assessed slightly better because he's measuring power at the crank and you're measuring it at the tire on a CompuTrainer. But if you go out and beat him, what does it matter?
That's what I measure at the crank with my Quark or with the stages. And I know some people at Trainer Road just use a kicker. Mm-hmm. And I know that some of the kickers we have measure like 15 watts higher, 15 to 20.
Mine's 15 watts lower. So,
Then my power meter. Mm-hmm. So but I'm okay with that. Right. So we have a little board where we all put our power to weight ratios and I'm slowly climbing up the board. And I know some people I'm probably ahead of, but they're just on
kicker.
Their number might be a little inflated. But who cares? Like when I race them, that's when it would really matter, right? Mm-hmm. That's when it all matters. Yep. And it doesn't matter what your power meter says, like just as Chad says, it's
totally
race day.
It's performance.
Yep. Exactly. Dave, hi guys, love the podcast. 6 stars.
Ooh, six.
Six. Yeah. Maybe he actually got them to change that on iTunes and
he did
the first
a 5-star and a 1-star.
Don't do that. It doesn't add up. Those average. He says, I was wondering which training plan you would advise for an Everesting attempt. For those that don't know what an Everesting attempt is, the goal is to climb 29,029 feet. I believe that's Everest height.
Yep.
And you climb that within a single ride. And I think that has to fall within a 24-hour period to be considered like an Everesting attempt. So he says, assuming the hill would be 2 to 3 kilometers long and 7 to 9% average grade. So that's a pretty steep climb.
Yep.
I have an attempt coming up in a couple of months and have been doing a mix of long outdoor rides coupled with threshold and VO2 max intervals on Trainer Road. Regards, Dave.
Yeah, I think you're on the right path, Dave. That's basically, it's going to come down to muscular endurance. Just, you know, hitting a climb reasonably hard, but nothing you can't repeat ad nauseum. You're going to do this a lot of times. As much as your fitness is going to come down to gearing too. If you're on a steep grade like that, you do not want to be mashing it in a 25 tooth cog, you know, maybe a 28 or 30, either way, or compact gearing. In any case, I would recommend over the course of, you know, whatever training you have left leading up to this, going out and experimenting with different cadences and seeing what works for you. Maybe you climb better, much more efficiently and can last at 85. Maybe you need to be at 90, maybe 95. But the cadence is going to become a crucial issue over the course of all of these repeats. But the fitness is all about muscular endurance.
How long does a Everest attempt take usually?
It depends. You see a lot of people, it's pretty common to see it anywhere from 15 to 20 hours.
Yeah, so it's definitely an endurance.
Yes.
You know? It's not like a, even not even a climbing road race. It's more like a century.
Triple century.
Yeah, and here's the tough part about that. If your gearing doesn't allow you to ride at a lower intensity, you're going to have a lot of hours putting out a lot of watts or a lot of strain at the very least.
Yeah, you're not going to last
compact in a 32 or something.
Yeah.
Because you're going to,
Yeah, yeah. Like air is on the go as easy as you can on gearing. It's going to pay off. It's kind of like what we were just talking about. If you were to run the physics on that, I bet that if you were spinning up at a lighter gear, even though you're going slower, you'd probably finish that Everesting attempt sooner than if you had a really heavy gear that just completely exhausted you every
just
time.
Kind of grind you down.
So Chad, even you said a reasonably hard, I would think it was even like zone two, right? If you're going to go zone two, like,
yeah. Oh yeah. If you're going to last for, we're talking 20 hours here.
Yeah.
It has to be zone two. I mean, so you can't run a tempo for 9% grade
will be hard to do with, I mean, you're going to have to.
And the thing about an Everesting attempt is you want it to be short and steep, right? Because you want to just be up and then down something short. And then, so then that way, the amount of time that you spend on the bike, there's more time climbing. Mm-hmm. If it's a long, gradual one like that, and you can't, it gets tough to carry a whole lot of speed up that, then
honestly,
it's tougher.
I don't see you climbing in anything lower than 90 RPM, not if you're going to last for that long. I mean, it's also what you're used to. If you're used to 85, maybe you can make 85 work, but I would keep it 90 or higher. You're going to have to keep a quick, light spin for many, many hours.
So try climbing that at that RPM in your like zone two endurance kind of power and see if you can make it up once with that RPM. I would think that for the climb, I wouldn't mind a longer climb. It's just the only thing I'd want to do is make sure that wind resistance isn't a factor. Because as long as wind resistance is a factor, I wouldn't really care.
You just want to minimize the time that you spend descending because you have to go back down, then go back up, then go back down, then go back up.
And I would argue that you'd probably spend less time descending on something long where you're not speeding up and going down. Than versus having to accelerate again and again, because it's still the same distance traveled.
Well, I guess pitch is more, or gradient is more important than duration then, right? Like that's like what we're talking about. If you want to, for the distance traveled, you want to be gaining as much as you can. That's really the main goal with that, right? So.
Yeah, I don't even know if you get to choose the hill.
You do.
You do.
Yep, okay. You do. Yeah.
You can do multiple hills if you want.
Yeah.
This is like 12 times up right here, Geiger.
More than that.
So you're basically just looking to accumulate 29,000 feet of climbing, regardless of how you go about it in a certain time frame. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, I've been holding this one close to the belt because I don't really want, but I'm going to do it right now. So there's a local ski resort. Yeah. There's a local ski resort called Sky Tavern, and it's up here in Reno. It's at about 7,500 feet up there. And it's got this fire road that would be perfect for going up. It's steep, but not too bad. And then it's got a descent that you can just come right back down on the fire road. But I figured it out. It'd be 86 times that I have to go up this climb. But with 86 times, I would be able to get in the 29,029 feet.
And on a mountain, that's probably the worst way to do it, because on a mountain bike, it's going to be heavier and your rolling resistance is going to be more.
It's like DG too. It's loose dirt.
The descending is going to take so much more out of your body 86 times than a road descend.
This is all very accurate. Yeah,
and the elevation.
Yeah.
86 times.
But so I'm thinking of doing this to a close friend of mine who had a spinal cord injury, and I'm thinking of doing it and getting people involved in the community involved to raise some money for spinal cord research. So
you asked me to pace you. I was like, nope. I probably just
went no part of this.
So yeah, good luck with your Everesting attempt. If you want some tips, there's Trainer Road, or a good longtime user of Trainer Road. His name's Stuart Barrington. You can find him and I don't think he would mind me sharing his name, at Quadrathon on different social channels. He's done a number of different Everesting attempts. He has a lot of great advice for that, because I think he's had some failed attempts and some successful ones. So he has some great advice. I know he targeted I think down by Malibu area, which is pretty smart. They're steep, consistent climbs that he can do.
It's one of those things like, why?
Gnarly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could ride my bike across America, but why?
But why? All right. This question is from Reddit. It says, at the beginning of 2016, I set my eyes on a timed hill climb event at the end of August. Long story short, I've been on track and making strides for a strong personal effort. Thanks to Trainer Road structured high volume programs and improved diet and nutrition. His FTP went his power to weight ratio. Here are the numbers. So 148 to 266
for his FTP.
That's massive.
That's a big jump.
Yep. His weight from 200 to 144.5 pounds. That
is a big jump. Yeah. Those together at the same time. And then get his FTP to...
His power to weight ratio was 1.63, which is like not great,
yeah.
But it's beginner stuff.
Yeah.
Like new beginner, beginner to the sport stuff. All the way up to 4.05 watts per kilogram.
Oh, wow.
That is awesome.
And
so
he did that in 1 year?
That's dedication.
This is one of those guys that might have great genetics, but did not live the great genetic lifestyle.
Right.
Kind of lived
Totally.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's a good point.
I don't want to assume his lifestyle, but.
Right. After the event, I plan to start over with another round of traditional base, then go into a build plan, then do the road specialty plan. So I don't know which one he's planning on there, but during the off season, I plan on adding five by five. Would that be the proper way to say that?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So 5x5 weightlifting and into the mix, focused on building strength, not bulk muscle. I would also like to increase my training volume on the bike beyond Trainer Road's high volume plans. For folks that are doubling their ride duration, so remember this is to Reddit, so he's asking everyone else their opinion there, and we'll just provide ours. For folks that are doubling their ride duration, how are you approaching this? Are you using the workout creator and doubling the middle workout segment back to back with only one warm up and cool down period? Or are you simply doing back to back workouts, which include double the warm up and cool down periods? Any insight would be much appreciated. Thanks.
So there's a few things on this. One is, if you're on the high volume plan, how do you make it higher volume? Mm-hmm. Which is a good general question, which do you want to address that one first before you get into anything else?
Yeah. Yeah. Typically, that's just about accumulating more volume. You don't often, you might not need more intervals. The high volume plans probably have enough intensity for most riders already. It's nothing to say you can't tack on an interval or two and start to grow the TSS in that manner, but you reach a breaking point with intensity much earlier than you reach it with volume. And you're more about long days in the saddle. So frankly, I would just grow those long rides. If you're doing long indoor rides of 3 hours or 4 hours, then they just get incrementally longer from week to week. It's just a delicate balance when it comes to that intensity. How much can you raise it before you actually break down?
Mm. For me, I do not like the long 4 to 5 hour indoor rides. My record is 3:30, 3:47, somewhere in there. But I think something that we should actually add to Trainer Road that I want to do is have an alternative ride on those endurance ones, which are long sweet spot intervals. Because I feel like you can get pretty close to the same benefit of 2 hours of even just solid street sweet spot as you can in a 4 hour ride. And could that be a way that somebody, so let's say someone's doing high volume and they're already doing all those long ones.
Yeah.
That they change some of those TSS fillers and do some of those ones where it's like 15 minute intervals at 85%, or they do lots of those, or they, you know, and they extend that to maybe 90 minutes at 85% and they do intervals of that to do lots of sweet spot, can do a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. At some point, there comes a transition between, you know, slow fiber fatigue, which you have to work at low effort levels, mm-hmm. and you know, intermediate and higher, you're not going to be touching any fast twitch with efforts like this, threshold and sweet spot. But you just have to, kind of balance what you're after. Slow fiber fatigue and glycogen depletion, well, let's just limit it to slow fibers. It takes a long time. Those fibers are highly resilient. They take a long time to fatigue. So if you're trying to grow your slow fiber capacity, you know, hypertrophy for those fibers in particular, it's long, slow stuff. That's how it's going to happen. If you're just trying to increase your muscular endurance and deplete glycogen, you can absolutely go about it with, you know, sweet spot work.
Mm-hmm. So for him, maybe a timed hill climb event, I bet it's not going to be a 5 hour event.
Not that very long. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not doing Everest attempt.
Right.
Yeah, the last person.
Yeah.
So in his case, maybe where he is at now, we should probably get into, is this even a good idea?
Yeah. The only situation that I could see where that would, there would be an exception, well, actually not even that, like the longest climb that I can think of is or event with that is like Taiwan KOM challenge. And that's like 40 something miles, but it's still not going to take you, you know, we're not talking, you know, we're getting into
longer workouts doesn't always equate to better fitness. It's not just a question of being able to go longer or, you know, in order to go longer, do I have to do longer workouts?
Yeah, they have their place.
The workout, the fitness can be cultivated with much shorter workouts.
Yeah, they have their place for sure. I think that, so, and to give you an example, how I've added on I've done a high volume plan and then added on more volume to that. And by the way, I consider myself pretty capable of taking a lot of TSS, But, and especially at this point in my life, I was sleeping unlike now, and I didn't have all the stress of having a baby and everything else. But, I was following the high volume plans very strictly throughout the week. And then on the weekend, I was doing long 5, 6, even 7 hour rides on the bike. Now, for me, what Chad noted, I experienced, it was very easy for me to manipulate my weight and to, also to get a lot of adaptations that I needed, because that long, slow stuff isn't the best for me. I struggle with that. And I really notice a lot of benefit when it comes to late in a road race or anything else like that, or a long mountain bike race with that. So I was adding on there, but it wasn't a long-term solution. That's one thing. And once again, I consider myself like the type of person that's capable of carrying a lot of stress. It started to wear me down after a while. If you're following, for most people, if you're following a high volume plan and your FTP is accurate, you're going to be getting a lot of training stress that should be bringing about the type of improvement that should be sufficient. If you're chasing more, I could see a situation where you get fatigued in the short term, and then you might, you know, put yourself behind going into the next phase of training. Even it could be, you know.
Yeah.
So
for me, so like on the mid volume that we're doing right now, a mid volume sustained power build on the Wednesday and the Friday. So the Wednesday, this is how I feel. If I'm feeling good on that Wednesday or Friday, because they're days off, I might do. Well, if I'm feeling not horrible, okay, I'll do Petit.
Yeah.
Petit. I'm just going to change
like a
the
dog,
name.
You pet it.
I'm just going to change the name of the workout because I can do that. I'll do that. And that's some calorie burning. If I'm feeling awful, I'll skip it. But like last week I was feeling pretty good and I did Mount Field, which is, I believe, 3 times 12 minute or 3 times 15 minute. I'm going to pull it up right now.
Yeah, 85%.
Yeah. 85% for,
I think they're 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yep. So, and that one, that actually worked really well. I did, that worked. I did the hard workout, that workout, and then another hard workout. And I felt really, I was like, whoa, that really hit me hard.
Yeah.
That's one way that I can increase the training plan based on how I'm feeling and kind of tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was still able to hit my weekend ones. Now this week, I got less sleep. This whole week I've gotten less sleep. And Wednesday I just said, nothing. I'm not doing anything.
Right.
Now tonight I'm going to Rib Cook Off and I got all you can eat tickets. So I am doing.
You got tickets for friends?
So along those lines. Gave them to us. Along those lines, I'm doing the high volume version, which already includes those Wednesday and Friday workouts. Maybe not
look
Friday
at Chad.
Just yet.
I didn't know that.
You just got
but I just
got
to change my plan.
But see, when I hit Wednesday workout, I've had to kind of dial it back. So, so that Wednesday workout can come at the expense of the Thursday far more important workout. Mm. So just like Nate said, you kind of make that game time call where, you know, I'm just a little too tired to do this today, so I'm going to skip it or I'm going to tone it down. But it's the same idea. And it's not the same from week to week either. You know, in 1 week, a very similar workout can knock you down because other things are going on in your life. Maybe you didn't eat as well, sleep as well. So many things have to factor into it. So it has to be a game time decision and it has to happen. You know, just sometimes within the workout, you may start the workout and realize, man, I'm just struggling today. My heart rate won't elevate. I can't, this much power shouldn't feel this difficult and pull the plug or tone it down.
I actually skipped. I, the first time in a long time, I stopped a whole workout early and let me see which workout it was. But the reason why I did it is I actually like my legs just.
They had
nothing in it. And I realized I had like barely any carbs for like 24 hours and I didn't, you know, and then the next day I went to Popeyes and I had fries and stuff and the next workout was fine. But I just had like this weight loss thing is
one thing with this guy's situation that I think of is you're new. I would assume if you went from, you know, FT, you have a watt kg of 1.63,
years of experience.
Right? And I know that when I first started cycling, I was like training stress, which I didn't even know what it was, but I was bring it on, right? Like I was really getting, doing as much as I could. But the one thing that I've learned with, and I'm sure some gym sensei is saying, some bro somewhere else, but you have to be patient with your gains. Like they come with time. And if you try to rush it a lot of the time, you end up putting yourself in a long-term hole. So... Mm. That can be kind of tough.
And then the strong lifts 5x5, that's really popular on Reddit, the fitness forum on that. And that's pretty much, you're doing the squats, bench press, barbell row, overhead press, and deadlifts. And you're pretty much just doing 5 sets of 5. It's a great way, especially if you're a beginner. to get those basic like strength patterns down, their full body stuff, you will get a lot stronger. It's not really bodybuilding stuff, but you'll get strong. For cycling, there's probably not any research that I have heard of that something like strong lifts will make you stronger. But if this is like, he just wants to get strong, that's not a bad way. Just don't think it's going to make you like fly up a hill by increasing your squat.
Yeah.
But again, this could be going back to like one of the first questions, Chad. If during the off season, if he takes a week off and just wants to, or a month off and just wants to do strong lifts, and it's like completely, it's like sounds good mentally, and that would be another choice that he could do.
Why
right?
Why not? Yeah. My only concern there would be that if you're not an experienced weightlifter, jumping into heavy lifts is probably not the way to go about it. So a little more anatomical adaptation or some, just stuff that's toned down. Don't jump into the heavy stuff unless you know you can do it quite well.
I think they have you start off pretty, because it's geared towards a lot of beginners that you do it, and he stresses proper form and all that kind of stuff. Good. But yeah, you don't want to try to you'll hurt something. Don't CrossFit yourself.
It's all part of a progression, just like everything else we do. I mean, you have to learn how to do it well before you do it heavy.
Respect the gains. Be patient. All right, last question from Dean. He says, "Hey guys, really love your stuff. How can I be sure I'm getting fitter and not just better at taking FTP tests?"
In a word, performance. So here's that recurring theme. You know, are you riding faster? Are you racing faster? Are you climbing that hill faster? Et cetera. You'll also see it within the context of, you know, trainer road, where you're handling longer intervals at higher intensities. Maybe the recoveries are shrinking and you're doing it. Your TSS is increasing and your body's not breaking down. So either way, you're handling more stress. Your capacity for work is growing. And then keep in mind, it's just like, you know, Greg LeMond said, it never gets easier. You only get faster. So the workouts never get easier. Your FTP just goes up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The great way too, like, so if you're just using trainer road and you're, especially during the winter and you can't go outside, if you're doing an interval and it's, we pace it for you, and then 4 to 6 to 8 weeks later, you're doing that same kind of duration and wattage is easy, or you're doing a higher one, proof right there, you're getting faster, because the way that you get better doing FTP tests is by pacing it better. Mm-hmm. So we're already pacing you during these intervals.
Yeah.
And another thing, this is crazy, but I think I started my comeback last year around November, and my first FTP test was, I think I was 180 or was I 190?
Wow.
Right now, and I think I'm going to come back again at 320 here in a second.
Yeah. But solid.
I am now doing my some of my recovery stuff was hard, right? Like 190 to me now, I could do 190
all day.
Everest attempt.
Oh, yeah, breathe through your nose.
Yeah, exactly. But before, 190
is everything.
Exactly. And right there, so obviously I'm not just getting better at FTP tests. I'm really stronger.
Yeah. And one thing, Dean, with you too, never discount the fact that you always will be getting better at doing FTP tests. Always. You'll always be getting...
Well, there'll be a limit.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But you should constantly be improving your either mental fortitude or your focus and your pacing. You're going to be improving, hopefully, on that front and always making sure that you're better at that. So that's one thing that I would point out, that there will always be some sort of a combination, but if you're following a training plan and you're resting adequately, you'll be getting faster, you know? So that's how it works. So hopefully that gives you the info you need. Thanks for sending in the questions this week, everybody. Remember, you can do that at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad on any of the social channels, or you can find us. You can submit your questions to us via Snapchat as well. Please leave some reviews. We saw some more reviews this week on iTunes. Yeah, it's good stuff. Keep them coming. 5-star reviews. If you have a 4-star review, submit it.
Well, you can email us and we'll fix it.
Let us know. We'll fix it. And then you'll ask iTunes to give us 7 stars or something extra special. Yeah. And then please share the podcast. Share out the episodes. You can share SoundCloud links. You can share anything else like that. Let people know about it, because a lot of people are finding out about structured training and everything else through this podcast. It's awesome.
Hey, did we have anyone, I know I asked a while ago, but did anyone respond saying they want like just to talk about any tech stuff we see at Interbike?
Yeah. So we have a lot of people that want us to talk to Ray. So Raymaker, if you're listening, we'll be finding you.
He's so busy though.
He's a busy guy. Yeah. We'll make it, maybe we'll do a hybrid with his DC Rainmaker Live and the podcast at the same time. It'll be cool. There were a number of people that wanted us to give them all the deets on the new trainers and power meters. That's really what they seem to be concerned with. So we'll spare you all the like the new socks or stuff like that.
But that'd be cool to do a rundown of all the new trainers we saw.
It'd be cool.
And the differences in all the new power meters.
Yeah. We'll try to paint a picture for you when we're there. So, and maybe we can get some content there from Cross Vegas too. It'll probably just be a lot of yelling, cowbelling, and heavy breathing from all of us.
Are you going to GoPro it?
Yes.
Can you?
Yeah.
Do they let you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, it's going to be good. I should do that too. Oh yeah. Our things have mounts for them now.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, our K-Edge Garmin things K-Edge have Garmin a double mounts. Edge so we can put a
Garmin underneath.
Yeah. Garmin. Oh, we should all do it. Each one of my crashes.
Yeah. Yeah.
On film.
We need a GoPro on the front and back on each one. That'll make for entertainment, people.
That'll make for a long video too.
We will not make it contiguous. It will be cut up short. We respect your time. Thanks so much, guys. On that note, we will talk to you all next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.